This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Now, some people are going to ask why I'm doing this. I'm a chef. I've spent 20 years running around the food business, the wine business, and each week I'm going to be calling on some of the friends and colleagues that I've met over that period of time to help me do this. I don't know everything, of course. And my first guest is Dan Sims.
Hi, Pete.
Hi, Dan. Dan is a sommelier, and we're going to explore with Dan what exactly a sommelier is. Now, you've had this ridiculously long career already, and I mean, what, you're about 16?
Thanks, Pete. The flattery, I like it. Works well.
So you started at Walter's Wine Bar when it was the wine bar in Melbourne.
Well, it was. I think hospitality is one of those things that I really got into first. So it was working in cafes, bar straight out of high school, and I tried to go to university, and it wasn't exactly for me. But just started getting into wine a little bit and found it very fascinating. And I think it really when it first really kicked off was working at Walter's back in the heyday. There was a great group of people there, incredible wine list, and the whole food and wine, especially wine by the glass culture happening in Melbourne, really was sort of that Walter's was the catalyst for that.
Now, this is back in the mid-90s, yeah?
Oh, yes.
Right, so it's not so long ago, really.
Not so long ago.
What made you look at hospitality as a career? You said you tried university. God knows we all did that at some point, I think.
I think it's funny. We talk, especially in whether it's wine or hospitality, I think it's an industry that chooses you rather than you choose it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something about it that's I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was it's not just it's hard work, but do you work hard and you play hard? But it's always it's the nocturnal lifestyle which I found attractive. But it's also food and wine. It's the two go hand in hand, and it's looking after people, getting that experience and making them walk away with something they haven't exactly had before, which is pretty special.
Let's get down to tin tacks. What is a sommelier? Please explain.
Well, sommelier. Gee, where to start, huh? Do you know how long we've got about an hour. But effectively, it's a wine waiter, someone who looks after the wine list in a restaurant, someone who helps put that together, manage it, order all the stock in, purchase, train the staff. But effectively, really, it's about wine service. When you go into a place and you're after something, what do I drink? It's one of those great questions. What's a great glass of wine? I'm still trying to figure that out. But sommelier's role is there to help you, guide you through, and especially with food and wine matching, working with the chefs, putting all together, but basically all aspects of wine service in a venue.
So apart from a cast iron liver, what skills do you need to become a sommelier? Obviously, you need a palate.
A palate is definitely being able to identify these characters, but it's something that you don't. I mean, there's some people out there that are born with a natural palate. I personally just think that I don't. It's something that I've had to work at. It's training. It sounds really funny, isn't it? Training in wine.
How do you train your palate, though? How do you take this set of senses that you've got on your tongue?
Well, it comes with your olfactory memory. So if you next time you say, if you go to go to a market, and when you're trying to identify characters, so much about his fruit. I mean, we handle fruit and food all the time, but it's the smell of it. I mean, when's the last time anyone actually picked up a lemon and smelt it? I mean, it's one of those things. So I think for me, when I was learning about trying to identify these characters, smelling as much as I possibly could to get that sort of memory happening. But at the end of the day, it's very important when it comes to wine is to keep it simple, especially when explaining it to a customer.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Where would we find some of the best sommeliers in Melbourne?
Gee.
Without sort of gratuitous advertising for any particular location, because that will get me in more trouble than
I think
it's worth.
When it comes to sommeliers, it's important to remember with sommeliers, there's a great group of young guys coming up through the ranks who have been working in great places that have that, I suppose, approachability. And for me, what I look for in a really good sommelier is approachability. Someone, it's important to remember that that as a sommelier, you shouldn't dictate your taste to other people. So it's important to, offer the guest what they want to drink rather than what you think they should drink. Saying that, some great places, I have to say, would be, say, Link Riley, Taxi Dining Room,
mm-hmm.
Dave Lawler, Rockpool, Liam O'Brien, Circa, Sally Humble from Cutler & Co.
I was about to say, where are the women? And how prevalent are women in the industry as compared to men?
Getting a lot more. I think it's that's really exciting. It's as you know, I work with Sommeliers Australia, and we did an education course last year, and we probably had about, it was almost half and half, guys and girls. Guys up at the City Wine Shop, Gabrielle Poy and Lisa Beck up there, Sophie Otten, who's a Rockpool Bar and Grill in Sydney. She's doing an incredible job. Kim Bickley, who's at Glass in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Spittori over in Perth. She's yep. doing some great stuff. I mean, she's just had a baby, but she's been a bit distracted of late. But I think there's, the female sommelier are becoming a lot more common, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that, it is there. It's, I think it's important to dispel that myth of a boys' club, because it's not.
Sure. So I'm sitting down at my favourite restaurant, and somebody suitably kitted out, well-dressed, reasonably good-looking, comes over and says, "I'm your sommelier." How do we break down that fear of who this person is and what they're going to try? Because me as the diner, I'm convinced that this person is going to try and sell me something.
Definitely. I think it's important to remember that for me, there's a big difference between upselling and servicing. Asking you if you'd like a glass of wine or, would you like to try something? Would you like to try this? For me, that's servicing. Upselling is when, if I go to a car yard and I've got 10 grand car and all of a sudden I walk out paying 25. For me, that's upselling. But servicing is incredibly important. But that role is the sommelier is to help guide you. To not judge, but it's also trying to get an understanding of what you like. So I tend to I would ask a lot of questions. What do you enjoy drinking? What are you eating tonight? But I don't talk price range. It was just more to get a gauge. And if I do, I'd offer three selections at three different price points.
Quite often, we're choosing wine before we order food.
Yes.
Because you've got...
I tend to do that.
Well, 9 people out of 10 will do it. You'll go into a restaurant, you'll be sat down, somebody will give you a menu, and within seconds, there's somebody there saying, "What can I get for you to drink?" So should we be making decisions on wine then, or should we have a glass of something we like while we're deciding on what we're going to eat? And how many of those old myths, things like, white wine with white meat, red wine with red meat, that sort of hoo-ha garbage that has been around for years.
Yeah.
Break all of that down for me.
Well, I think for me personally, when I like to go to dinner or lunch or something, it's a progression. Start off with a glass of
beer. Get progressively over-refreshed. Yeah, I've been to lunch with you, Dan.
Wine's a social lubricant. Come on, let's face it. I love having a glass of fizz, and because it's light and dry. And what it does, it acts as I suppose it makes you salivate. Got high acid. It's nice and crisp. So it does. It gets you ready for. Get ready to eat. So you are salivating. You go, "Oh gee, now I'm getting really hungry." I think look at the menu. I think you need a drink as soon as you sit down, whether it's a gin and tonic or a little Campari or something like that, or a glass of fizz or something.
You're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9. The voices you're hearing are mine, Pete Dillon, and my guest Dan Sims, who is a sommelier from Sommeliers Australia and the Wine Guide. A lot of what you've described is, and you're going to look at me quite strange with this, is a glorified waiter.
Perhaps.
So what? Why should I, as a restaurateur, somebody who's a frequent diner, pay heed to this sommelier person?
Well, I think it's a very good point, actually. I think when I'm not just talking as a sommelier or a wine waiter, it's so much about front of house, as much as I say being that whether it's a wine sommelier or that person in front of. When you break it down in terms of a restaurant, it's important to remember that not all the revenue from a venue comes from food. And the rest comes from beverage.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, what you're looking at is I've got a head chef, but
yep.
if that head chef can effectively only contribute approximately, say, anywhere between, say, 50 to 60% of revenue. The rest of that comes from beverage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to have some. That's quite a big chunk of a high end restaurant's income. So you need someone there to be there and manage it. But it's so much of it is not the front of house side; it's the back of house. And when I've worked, when I was at 15, or is it when I was the sommelier at Taxi before? So about probably 3/4 of my time was spent back of house going over invoicing.
We'll be back with Dan Sims on Cravings on Joy 94.9 in just a moment. This is Cravings on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon, and I did ask you to interact with us during the program between 1 and 2 every Saturday. You can do so on 96992949. You can email on air at joy.org.au, or you can SMS 0427JOY949, as has Kieran. Thank you, Kieran. Love the idea and concept for the show. We're with Dan Sims, who is a sommelier and knows a great deal about wine, more than I could probably ever expect to know. Obviously, you need to be a bit of a showman to be a sommelier, I would assume. A show person, I should say.
Well, I think all front of house people, if you go to a diner, go to a restaurant, have to have some sort of element of personality. And it's, you know, it's almost schizophrenic, almost, because you've got to look after one table, might want a bit serious service, whereas the other one wants to have a little bit of fun. So it's getting an understanding and a gauge. It's like part psychoanalyzing a table and getting a feel for what they want, and then, you know, changing it to, you know, at the end of the day, to make sure they have a great time.
So how does one, okay, let's assume there's somebody out there listening to this program, I hope there's one or two, and they think, okay, this is for me. I'm extremely passionate about wine. I think I know my stuff. I've had some front of house experience. How do I become a sommelier?
Gee, it's from when I started out, there's a lot more options. When I started out, it was very much just on the job experience. Mm-hmm. Now there's a range of alternatives. So first of all, if you're very keen to get involved with the sommelier industry and become a sommelier, join Sommeliers Australia. Mm-hmm. I know it's a gratuitous plug, but we're doing some fantastic tastings. It's a national body. There's a whole lot going on there. So that's primarily number one.
And does Soms Australia provide some sort of training programs throughout the year that people can attend to?
Absolutely.
Develop
skill? We do monthly tastings all the time. We look at wines from not just at home, but around the globe. It's also a great opportunity to network, see some guys, have a chat, guys and girls, and just, you know, and feel not intimidated about it. But that, I think that's step one. Step two is obviously education. You need to learn. There's now available in Australia the Wine Spirit Education Trust courses, or WESET, mm-hmm. For short. They're fantastic in terms of theory. I would definitely recommend doing those. In Victoria, they're run by the Prince. In Sydney, they're done by Ride. But there is talk at the moment to actually take that nationally.
Okay.
So I'd say that'd be step two. Step three, if you are serious about it, I know this is going to sound very wanky, but the Court of Master Sommeliers are now coming out each year to Australia. And
where are these folks
these
from?
These guys are based in the they're UK based, but they're huge in the States.
Right.
And
what are they called?
The Court of Master Sommeliers. They get to wear
like
a badge.
Some sort of cult.
Yeah. It's they wear a blazer with a really most thing. It's very funny, and you get to, if you do the second blazer, yeah. And they're offering levels 1 and 2, which are okay. Certified sommelier. So if you get level 2, you become certified. Then what I did last year, I called it validated. I think a lot of Melbourne songs were validated by the court. It's important. They're not an education body; they're an examining body.
Okay. And how much can I expect to earn as a sommelier? Do I get paid better than a waiter? And what sort of there's only so many elite restaurants, or those at the higher end of the scale, that would have a budget for a sommelier, I'm assuming?
Oh, I think yes and no, but I think it's important thing to remember is the style of the place and the focus of what the wine program has. Yes, it is probably more than a waiter, but in terms of those high-end restaurants, I mean, it could be anywhere between, say, 60 up to 100, 120, 130, because when you look at it, at the role and the importance of managing some sellers which are worth, you know, $2 million, let's take Rockpool Sydney Bar and Grill in Sydney, for example.
Yep.
$6 million, you're in charge of managing that and controlling it and doing all the stock. That's
what's
incredibly important.
Now let's
role.
Talk the Royal Mail Hotel in Dunkeld, which is a tiny little town in Western Victoria, tiny little town of 400 people, with this massive old pub that's become, you know, this mecca for foodies and wineies. What's that cellar worth?
Oh, look, that cellar, I couldn't honestly tell you. Millions. I've had the pleasure of walking into it a few years ago, and
same.
It was walking around going, it was like a wish list. There was lots of pallets of things that you've never even seen in the country.
How can a business sustain holding $2 million, $3 million worth of stock?
I think it has to be the interest of the owner. Someone has to have a very passionate for that level. But in terms of other restaurants and venues, it's the passion and enthusiasm from the owners. If they're keen and they want to have a great cellar and a great wine program, that say Circa the Prince is a great example, and that group, they've got a huge amount of cellar, but they've got an incredible wine program to build and ensure that the staff are trained so they can sell it.
And how much of it is driven by fad? I know just in the last 10 years I've seen the what we call, I'm an ABC drinker, anything but Chardonnay.
Going to ABS, anything but Sauvignon.
Right. And, you know, the growth of wines like Pinot Grigio and a Pinot Gris, Gewürztraminer is all of a sudden having a nice little resurgence. I mean, how much of it is driven by fad? Who drives those fads?
Oh, gee. I think it all comes down to consumers. But it's important to remember when it comes to wine and trying to pick fads and trends, that to be the new best thing, for a winery to choose that, that's like a 5-10 year process. Mm. To plant it, it's 3 years before you get a crop, and then really 4 or 5 years after that before you really, you know, got a great style. But I think, you know, talk about Chardonnay is a great example. I mean, that, and with the insurgence, I should say, that's probably a good word. Or I say insurgence of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc coming to Australia. You know, that sort of style, I can understand why, because Chardonnay was sort of big, fat and flabby. Like, you know.
Well, Chardonnay's just been knocked off. Chardonnay for years and years and years has been the most consumed wine in Australia. That's just been knocked off its perch stats out last week or this week, saying that Shiraz is now the wine
Shiraz
we drink
is
most.
By far, Shiraz is the most important variety in Australia. Mm. But saying that, Chardonnay is coming back. Chardonnay's back, baby. I tell you, they're doing some fantastic styles. They've trimmed up, as I say, got on the Atkins diet. You know, they're nice and lean and fresh and got good texture. But you know, those sort of styles like Shiraz or Sauvignon Blanc, you know, are quite trendy at the moment. Alternative varieties. I think, you know, with anything, it's like if you listen to your favourite song all the time, you get bored of it after a while. You want to listen to something else. It's sort of same with wine or food. You want to go and explore it. There's so much out there.
If you want to ask questions of somebody who has the knowledge that Dan Sims has, you can call 96992949. You can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can SMS 0427JOY949. Now, we have some questions here for you, Mr. Sims.
Be gentle.
I'm going to let you think about them, because we're going to go to a song in just a moment. But I want you to know the questions are, do sommeliers in Melbourne wear those things around their neck dangling a silver tasting cup is question one.
Not on my watch.
Question two is, you've got time on these. You don't have to rush now. Question two is, how do I tell who is a sommelier? And question three, is he the person you ask for when you get a bad wine? Have a think about those, and we'll be back in just a second. And welcome back to Cravings on Joy 94.9. Too much coffee. My name's Pete Dillon. With me in the studio still is Dan Sims, who I don't think is going to leave for the rest of the day. He's from the Wine Guide and Sommeliers Australia. And we've also been joined by Matt Palmer from Bistro Floor, but we'll come back to Matt in just a second. Dan, you had some questions before the break from Tim, who wants to know about those things that you wear around your neck that dangle a little silver tasting
cup. The taste of vin. Well, I call it a bit of sommelier bling. It's a bit of a famous club in Burgundy, but it's what they, you know, for they have it around their neck and they test the wine to make sure it's in good condition. You know, personally, I find that they're quite annoying and very silly and ridiculous, but
and hardly hygienic. I should think. Not really.
Wine glasses. Yeah, nothing wrong with a wine glass.
Exactly.
But not on my watch. But
how do I tell who's a sommelier?
Ask.
Right.
So ask the question. Very simple.
For the man in black.
Well, not necessarily. I think it's a. Have you got a wine waiter or a sommelier in the restaurant?
Or is it the restaurant manager that does that?
Could someone help me through the wine list? Just ask. Really, ask questions.
And the final question from Tim was, is that the person you ask when you get a bad wine?
Well, now that is a tough question, because my philosophy when I put wine lists together, there was never a bad wine on my wine list.
But if you get a wine that's corked or oxidized or that has some sort of is challenged,
yes,
of course it's a bad wine.
Definitely, absolutely, and it's something that people need to be considered. Everyone's got their own personal taste, so the sommelier's role is to help find out what that is. But if it's faulty, meaning that it could be oxidized by those horrible things called corks, could be cork taint, could be random oxidization, just could be, you know, he's for a nice wanky term, scalped. So it'll just knock the fruit off. If there's something wrong with
terms
it, but
on this program.
Yeah.
I want to before we have to go and have some community announcements. I want to introduce Matt Palmer from Bistro Floor. Matt, good afternoon.
Hi guys.
Welcome to Cravings. We're very excited.
Thanks for having me here.
Show.
Yes.
Matt is the chef and owner of Bistro Floor in North Carlton, and we'll come back and talk to him about that business and his wine list in just a moment.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Hi, and welcome back to Cravings on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. With me in the studio is Dan Sims, who you've heard quite a deal from, and we just introduced you to Matt Palmer from Bistro Floor. Bistro Floor has an interesting story.
It does. The site where Bistro Floor is has had a long history of restaurants. It first started off as Fives, but it's probably more famously known as the site of Tansy's.
Now, Tansy's was around in the late 80s, and it was sort of ranked up there with eating houses like Petit Choux, Florentino, Jean-Jacques, Mietta, all of those sort of iconic restaurants that really gave Melbourne a new birth in the late 80s.
Yeah. And it's also had a couple of apprentices through Tansy's who have gone on to become quite well known.
Name drop?
Karen Martini.
Who we know from now the Melbourne Wine Room and, of course, TV appearances and her books. Yeah.
And also Philippa Sibley, pastry chef extraordinaire.
Philippa has just started somewhere else now.
She was at Guillaume.
Ah, that's where she was at Guillaume. Correct. So how did you end up being the chef proprietor of Bistro Floor?
Well, actually, I've probably moved a little more into the restaurateur role now. I've handed over the reins of the kitchen to a wonderful young man, Mark Hockenhull. He's now the head chef there. But I guess the journey to Bistro Floor has been quite a long one. I've always wanted to have my own restaurant and now finally do. And I guess it was just good fortune, really, that the site had come on the market when I was able to snap it up.
So who did you train under as a chef? Who was your guardian?
Actually, my background is in hotel management.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh.
So, but having had a 20-year career in hospitality, I found I kept getting drawn to the kitchen, having a passion for food and for cooking and for the thrill of the kitchen, the drama.
It's a crazy place to be.
Yeah, it is.
Now, tell us about the type of food that we can expect to eat at Bistro Floor. My understanding is it's sort of
our philosophy French. Has never been of a particular cuisine, but more of the bistro style. So the idea is to use the freshest possible ingredients, what's in season, source it locally, and also at the moment of, you know, looking for organic produce, free range, and just putting together menus that are accessible.
There's a couple of highlights. There's one thing I hope that never leaves your menu, and I hope it hasn't left yet, is that you do this beautiful seafood stew.
Yes, yeah, our Provençal-style seafood stew. I mean, we'd love to call it a bouillabaisse, but we can't really call it a bouillabaisse because don't have access to the fish of the Mediterranean. Yeah, but it's become a bit of a signature dish on the menu.
And I want to talk about your wine list, because we're going to talk in a little while to Robin Lewis from Visit Vineyards, who can explain what they do. And we've got Dan Sims here, who is, uber wine god as far as Melbourne goes. Tell us about your wine list, because it's not a typical wine list that I would find at my local bistro.
No, well, I guess the aim with the wine list was to try and to challenge people a little bit, take them out of their comfort zone. Not to be offering the same things that they could find on the shelf at Dan Murphy's. And also to give a good cross-section. So offer some good, interesting boutique local wines, but also some interesting European stuff. And often finding some great varieties that they won't necessarily be familiar with, like a Grenache Blanc.
Nice. So do you have a sommelier at your restaurant?
No, I put on the sommelier hat every now and again.
So your hats are chef, front of house, sommelier,
Well, I call it being a restaurateur.
Restaurateur.
It all goes under that, doesn't it?
It does.
Now, your partner is involved in the business with you, your life partner?
No, David Chisholm, my partner of 13 years now. And happy birthday to you, David. I won't say how old he is today.
30 plus GST should be.
Yes. That about covers it. He helped me in the initial stages of setting up the business, but he has his own career in music.
I was going to say, he's a composer, yes.
Yes, but we live upstairs and he has his studio upstairs, so he's very much in the building doing his own thing. while we're creating. He's creating music while we're creating food. Yes.
Sounds like a good match.
It does. Yeah. You are listening to Joy 94.9. This is Cravings. My name is Pete Dillon. With me in the studio is Amelia Dan Sims and the man of many hats from Bistro Florin Carlton, Matt Palmer. What sort of occasion can people look forward to if they walk in the door of Bistro Flor? Is it a special occasion venue? Is it somewhere people can eat sort of...
Well, our philosophy was we wanted to create a place that people would come to once a week rather than once a year. We wanted it to be like a home away from home. The food and the price point, we wanted to make it, you know, accessible. So there's an element of comfort food to the whole place as mm-hmm. well. But, you know, I think Mark in the kitchen's really clever. He always does a little twist or tweak to the dishes that make it just take it out of the ordinary.
I think it's important. Mm. It's when I like going out for restaurants. Sometimes it's nice to go out and just have a really lovely meal and feel comfortable rather than to do all the big bells and whistles sort of, you know, super duper, you know, icon sort of thing. It's you know, I like going to local places. You can go once or twice a week.
Yeah,
it becomes your own. It's like your own kitchen.
You know, and using, you know, the focus on seasonal produce. I mean, we've had Brussels sprouts on the menu at the moment, and it's amazing.
I love Brussels sprouts.
I hate them. They make me want to vomit.
Yeah. I love them.
No, Brussels sprouts with chestnuts and some pancetta. Gorgeous. Nice. Walking out the door.
Love it.
So what? There is such a rich culinary history in the building. What's something that people can look forward to apart from that Provençal seafood stew?
Mm. Well, again, the seasonal aspect is important to us, and Mark's been having a bit of fun with game birds.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some pheasant on the menu at the moment.
Where do you source that sort of stuff? I mean, pheasant isn't traditionally Australian; it's a European bird.
Well, it's funny you should mention it's actually from China.
Really?
The pheasant is a native of China, but was brought back. Oh, obviously, a long time ago. If you got wild in Europe, but we have some great suppliers, so we go directly to them, and they'll actually source stuff for us if we can't find it ourselves. But there's a pheasant farm up in Swan Hill, Olsen's Game Birds.
And, of course, we know Australia's Maggie Beer has a thing for pheasants place in the Barossa.
Mm-hmm. But also just trying to source, as I was saying before, organic or free range. You know, we use free range pork from Western Plains and things like that. So, and really, with this time of year, a lot of it is about the secondary cuts and braises, and, you know, we've got things like ox cheek on the menu.
It's cold, wet. Oh, ox cheek, fantastic. I love those sort of winter food. I think it's, you know, I think eating habits very much go seasonally as well as, I think my wine drinking habits tend to go seasonally as well.
Well, I know. I mean, we're not moving any white at the moment.
Surprise, surprise.
It's all reds. Yeah.
So it should be. Fantastic.
So when you have a wine list that I'm imagining is pretty much there all year.
Oh, look, I change it at whim a bit, Pete.
Right.
It is. Yeah.
When your chef is tailoring a menu for the restaurant and putting a new menu together for the season, how much work is done in conjunction with your wine list so that you don't have to every 3 months completely change your stock of wine?
Well, I guess the wine list is broad enough that we carry varietals that will match pretty well with anything, but I do go through, Mark and I do sit down and we will discuss the menu and look at the wines that we've got on the list or things that we might are considering putting on the list and do a little bit of matching. So the staff then can quite confidently say to people, you know, I recommend that, you know, you have this Pinot with this dish or...
That's always a great way to go.
Or instead of having that New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, why don't you try this... Roberto Gialla from Italy.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm with Dan Sims, sommelier. This is Cravings on Joy 94.9. Matt Palmer from Bistro Flores with us, and we will be back to you very shortly. Water and the flame, two things that we really need to cook, to eat, to drink. I'm joined by Dan Sims from Sommeliers Australia and the Wine Guide, and Matt Palmer from Bistro Flor, spelt F-L-O-R. That's in North Carlton, and you can go to your website, Matt, to check out menus and wine lists at...
Yes, at www.bistroflor.com.
So there you go. That's Matt Palmer's Bistro Floor in Nicholson Street in North Carlton. And we're joined by somebody now from Tasmania who's going to tell us where to go. From Visit Vineyards, it's Robin Lewis. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
And hi, Dan. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Robin.
Hi. Robin, tell us where to go. You run an organisation that is wine, food and travel, I guess, and you focus on places in and around Victoria. So if we were to go to, I don't know, the Mornington Peninsula?
Yes, Pete. Our business is visitvineyards.com and we're an online wine travel guide. As you say, we're focusing on Victoria at the moment. We're busy spreading Australia-wide as well. But, yeah, look, the Mornington Peninsula is just an absolutely fabulous region, just so close to Melbourne and with so much choice. It's the reason we selected that to launch our business in. It's just a fantastic place.
So if we were to go down the peninsula, let's jump in the car, drive down on Saturday morning, where should we stop? Give us a couple of wineries that you think are worth the journey to.
Pete, look, there's 140 vineyards and wineries down there and over 70 open to the public, and some are open every day, some by appointment only. I guess the main mistake to try and avoid is trying to do it all, but really to pick a region. Also pick what wine, if you're really wine-focused, pick what style of wine you're interested in and, you know, select a couple on that basis. The Mornington Peninsula, as you probably know, specialises in Pinot Noir, and they do make excellent Chardonnays, which I personally believe are very underrated. They're also pretty big on Pinot Gris, Pinot Grigio, but, you know, those three varieties, there's some fantastic wines down there, plus some up-and-coming as well, and even some cool climate Shiraz. So where would I start? Well, I think if I were going for a day, I'd sort of head for Red Hill and go to the hinterlands, and maybe even look at the eastern side of the peninsula as well, which is often overlooked, and there's, you know, some big names and some small names.
So the eastern side, what townships would we be looking for on the eastern side of the peninsula?
Well, I think, you know, near Merricks, it's a tiny little place down there, Red Hill up in the hinterlands. It's not really a town, it's a spread out sort of rural area, but it has got a heartland up there. But around Merricks, in between those two regions, and Balnarring, there's some really great little places to go, and some bigger names like Stoneyers and Paringa.
Mm-hmm.
And Merricks General Store, well, you can go to sort of three wineries in one there. That's an outlet for LG Park, for Balia and for Balnarring Vineyard.
And correct me if I'm wrong, that's owned by Kathleen Queeley, formerly of Tregallant.
That's right. She's a part owner along with a couple of the others as well, and they've taken it over. And that's a great place to, you know, base a little bit of tasting and a little bit of, you know, trying the local produce and things like that.
Robert, as well, I mean, what I love about going there to Mornington and travelling and seeing the wineries as well, there's so many great places to eat there now. They're amazing. There seems to be some great culture of food and wine down there now. But, where do you think, it's looking good at the moment, but there's something to eat?
Oh, look, there's some really great new places around. Verazon at Bluestone Lane that's near the Merricks area, and that's an up-and-coming place. And I really like Patonk, which is one of these little hidden gems that I think the locals all seem to know about and like keeping to themselves. But it's a great place for lunch, particularly in the French style. It depends what you're after. Again, if you want a sort of, you know, bigger establishment, Max's at Red Hill or Salix, you know, dinner time, long table, vines, they sure are sport for choice down there.
Yeah, fantastic, isn't it? I mean, I had an opportunity to go down to 10 by Tractor there, the restaurant there, and they've got a fantastic wine list and fantastic crew down there. Yeah. There's so much to do down there.
I think if you get into 10 by Tractor, you're probably there for the whole day.
Yeah, it's sort of dig in, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just fantastic.
In the interest, of course, of people not being over-refreshed when they're driving, are there little B&Bs in the area that people could stay at?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's so many, again, that, you know, it's really, really difficult to choose. But up around the hinterland area and that sort of region, Arthur's Superb Views is really nice. Up above Arthur's Seton, of course, you can go and have a nice, you know, in-suite massage, if you like. There's another little B&B, which we really like, Eastern Grey. And then there's Sartain's, Lime Tree Hideaway, and, of course, Max, you know, if you're meeting up with a few friends, Max's Retreat's always good. He's got two places, and one overlooks the vineyard. And George's B&B is another one of our favourites, and they also do cooking schools too, so you can sort of do a bit of cooking, culinary classes on the Sunday morning maybe. So there's so many, you know, places. Now, Mornington Peninsula doesn't have really big resort-style hotels, but the nearest Rusty Peppers, Moona Links, or there's Legendary as well, which is, you know, a very classy establishment. They also have their own vineyard, but even if it's just a couple, you can have a nice intimate weekend there as well.
And look, it's obviously a nice place for the entire boutique experience.
Oh, yes. Yeah, very much so. I mean, I would recommend people in Melbourne, if they have overseas visitors coming and want to show them a little bit about what's around Melbourne, and particularly the food. It's such a food basket as well. It was historically a fruit-growing area, and still to this day there's lots of fruit and fabulous food-growing places where you can go and taste at the tasting station, you know, try samples of things. It's a really, really, you know, all-in-one destination for a fruity, winey person.
It's pretty amazing. Well, not just Mornington, but also across Victoria, I think, Robin, as you're saying, it's a really important point to say, you know, in terms of Victoria, you know, we've got 21 different wine-growing regions, haven't we? You know, within that, there's something like 8,000 different growers and, you know, 1,200 different wineries. I mean, there's so much to see out there.
Are we spoiled for choice?
Well, it's a great thing to be spoiled about, isn't it?
Absolutely. Hey, Rob.
Yeah.
How do people get involved with Visit Vineyards so that they can find out all of this information as a frequent?
Just come to the website and visitvineyards.com, and you can subscribe to get our recommendations and reviews. We've got a huge database of wineries and vineyards across Australia, and we're probably the only one that really links it in with food as well. I can't claim that we've got all 8,000 in Victoria on, but we certainly try.
And you've got some incredibly talented and gifted writers, I believe.
Oh, we've got attracted a lot of interest from some big name writers who feel that they like to contribute, and we're really focusing a lot at the moment, Peter, on itineraries. We've just launched our events calendar, and we've got nearly 3,000 events around Australia on it already. It's just extraordinary how much is going on Australia wide in this area, and of course, again, Victoria's at the forefront of this. So, you know, go to visitvineyards.com/calendar and check out what's on next weekend and plan your trip accordingly. I mean, every weekend seems to have 20 or 30 events. It's just amazing.
Robin Lewis from Visit Vineyards, thank you so much for talking to us, and we'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks and you can tell us where to go again.
Oh, great. Well, have a good time.
Thank you. That's Robin from visitvineyards.com, and you just follow the links to whatever you want. It's an amazing site, and like I said, they have some incredibly gifted writers. Now, we've got a question, and perhaps, Matt, this is something you can answer. Can someone please tell me why don't restaurants in Australia ever have goose on the menu?
I wish I could answer that question. I'm not sure.
Okay. We will try and find out for you and let you know next week.
It's probably interesting. It's pretty gamey sort of
I think it's probably also to do with the size of the bird.
Like my mum, it's a tough old bird, isn't it?
Yeah.
But mind you, my mother-in-law makes a fantastic goose liver pate, which is delicious.
Yeah, because the only time I've really cooked with goose has been Christmas, when we've done a traditional goose stuffed with apple and cabbage.
It is very meaty.
Mm. Perhaps we can talk to... Well, we're going to do a bit of a market wrap just before we end this hour, because I can't believe it's gone already. And on the phone we have George Kiedis from Periwinkle Seafoods in Prawn Market. G'day, George.
How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. Tell me, what's good seafood-wise today? If people are going to grab some fish and cook some dinner, what are they going to cook?
Yep, well, harpooka. We've got local harpooka today, and that's going for a special at $36.90.
Yeah, let's not to worry too much about the prices. Just if you can give us a hint of what's good and what's in season.
Yep, well, blue-eye harpooka's in season, redfish, lake's entrance snappers. They're always nice eating, you know, in the oven or barbecue, something nice and quick. The whiting, we've got local whiting. Even Red Emperor from Northern Territory is nice eating.
Red Emperor is an endangered fish, is it not?
No, not Red Emperor. It's a part of the snapper family.
Right.
Red Emperor. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a sweeter tasting fish. It's nice. It's a reefy fish.
And what do we do with it, George?
Bake it, or we've got cutlets. You can, put in the oven, grill it. Yeah, barbecue it. It's just like the snapper. You can... Yeah, fillet it and put it on the barbie or...
Yeah. Right, hey, George, next week, I've got a challenge for you when we talk to you next week. Right. Do you want to have a recipe for me with something that's seasonal?
Sure can.
All right, mate, we'll talk to you then.
No problems.
Thanks,
enjoy
George. That's George Kiedis at Periwinkle Seafoods at the Prawn Market. And we've got another... Maybe we don't. We do have a question, though, and Dan Sims, you'll be able to answer this. This is a listener. I'm old enough to remember enjoying Chablis. But apparently we're allowed to call, we're not allowed to call it that. It used to be described as a flinty dry white. How do I ask for or identify a Chablis style these days? Now, I'll get you to just hold that thought while we talk to Andrew. Hello, Andrew. Andrew. No, we thought we had Andrew Vavrakis from Andrew Choice Meats. We'll talk to him next week. Dan, Chablis.
Chablis. Chablis is a place in France, just a north part of the Burgundy region, south of Champagne. Now, Chablis is, of course, being at a place, it's like in Australia, we can't actually say that a wine, you know, if it's sparkling wine, we can't call it Champagne.
Because there's a whole raft of changes. We're not going to see port in Australia anymore, are we?
No, we're going to see vintage, whatever the grape variety, Tokay, then they're calling it
Tokay. Burgundy.
Burgundy. Because it's all about the place. It'd be like the French calling a red Coonawarra.
Right.
But Chablis, I love Chablis. They're really lovely. It is Chardonnay, and it is very much a flinty, dry white. And for me, it's my go-to wine for lunch. I love a glass of Chablis with lunch.
I like
especially with a bit of a lovely
Chablis for breakfast.
Stew.
Perfect. Oh, now, we do have, we've had some success this time on the phone. We have Andrew Vavrakis from Andrew's Meats in Yarraville. G'day, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Mate, tell us, what's seasonal at the moment for meat? If we were to go out and buy something for dinner and whack it in the oven or in the pan, what would we be buying today?
Beautiful veal ribeye.
Veal ribeye.
Yeah.
How do we cook it, Andrew?
Just on the pan, just seal them on a pan and then you can just finish them on the oven or finish them off in the pan. Beautiful, beautiful veal coming through at the moment.
Okay, now is it yearling veal or is it younger?
No, white veal. It's,
white veal. That's
real
like
veal.
Really young, barely born veal, isn't it?
That's right.
Babies taste better, Pete.
There are vegetarians all over this state just cringing at the minute, Andrew. And what about some of your spectacular snags, mate?
Well, we just made some French Bourdon Blanc, but I think we're sold out. We're making again some next week. Chicken and cream Bourdon Blanc.
Nice.
And really white and fluffy. Like our customers say, it's like eating clouds.
Yum. Andrew, we'll talk to you next week, and you might have more of those snags there for us, buddy.
No worries.
That's Andrew Vavrakis from Andrew's Meats in Yarraville, probably one of the most famous butchers in Melbourne. We're out of time. Dan Sims, thank you for joining me and talking about wine to our listeners.
Thank you.
We've been able to answer a few questions, which is fantastic. Matt Palmer from Bistro Floor, thank you.
Thanks, Pete.
Good luck with the business, and people can go to your website again.
Yeah, www.bistrofloor.com.
And at Solmes Australia?
Yes, sommeliers.com.au.
This has been Cravings on Joy 94.9.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.